First, it's our weekly roundup of top stories out of Washington. President Trump is in the midst of two controversies on Twitter, and he's threatened to shut down social media sites. As he writes in one tweet, Twitter has now shown that everything we have been saying about them and their other compatriots is correct. Big action to follow, end quote. Twitter began adding a fact-check feature to at least some of the president's tweets opposing voting by mail. It hasn't done the same for tweets from the president pushing a long-debunked conspiracy theory about MSNBC host Joe Scarborough. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the new occasional fact-checking feature of the president's tweets? Do you think the platform is overstepping its bounds? What do you think about the president amplifying that conspiracy theory? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tolu Olorunipa is the White House reporter for The Washington Post. Tolu, good to have you back with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, a lot going on with the president and the Twitter platform, one of his preferred methods of communication. Let's start with this, the voting by mail issue. Can you remind us what the president has been saying about voting by mail as some states try to expand access to mail-in voting?
Yes, the president has very much really rallied against the idea of vote by mail on a massive scale. He has said, without evidence, that voting by mail leads to massive fraud, that Americans and states that decide to hold their elections allowing with the option of vote by mail are opening the door to massive fraud. And he's really opposed some of the efforts by governors to start implementing more expansive use of vote by mail, in large part due to the fact that gathering in large crowds, gathering in long lines is not advised at this time due to the coronavirus. And a lot of these governors are looking for alternatives, and they're looking to vote by mail as an option for both the primaries and the general election in November. And President Trump has been tweeting multiple times saying that vote by mail is not safe, that it's rampant with fraud, and that anyone who implements a mass vote by mail system is opening the door to all kinds of illegal voting. And that's why Twitter decided to basically fact check the president and add a label to some of his tweets and essentially say that, even though the president is saying this, we're adding this label to allow the public to know that what the president is saying is not true.
Now, we could spend a lot of time talking about Twitter and how it handles this kind of thing, and I think we're going to be doing that actually on Friday. We'll have a conversation about that. We could stay with the political side of things here. What was the president's response to being fact-checked then by Twitter?
Well, he has pushed back very hard. He has essentially said that he is threatening Twitter with action. He's saying that this validates his concern, his longstanding concern, that Twitter and other social media platforms are biased against Republicans, biased against his administration, and that he is looking to take action. He said big action to follow. He hasn't exactly said what he's going to do or what that action would be, but the federal government does have some power to potentially regulate or punish some of these social media platforms, and I imagine that his administration is looking for different ways that they might be able to exact some kind of revenge on these private companies for taking action. The president hasn't specified what he's going to do, but at least he's going to use his bully pulpit. He's going to even use Twitter itself to attack the company, to rally his supporters against the company and try to raise the idea that he is being discriminated against and that these companies are all biased and actually are interfering in the election to oppose him.
Talking to Tolu Olorunipa, White House reporter for The Washington Post, looking at some of the big stories in national political news this week. Staying on Twitter for a little bit, Tolu, we had the president made tweets about Joe Scarborough, former congressman from Florida, MSNBC host, frequent critic lately of the president. One of the tweets, when will they open a cold case on the psycho Joe Scarborough matter in Florida? Did he get away with murder? Some people think so. Quoting here, why did he leave Congress so quietly and quickly? Isn't it obvious what's happening now? A total nut job. That tweet from the president. Can you give us some backstory? I don't know. This takes some setup. Can you tell us what's going on there, Tolu?
President Trump and Joe Scarborough used to actually have a pretty decent relationship. President Trump would go on the Morning Joe show on a regular basis back in 2015 and early 2016. And that relationship has really led to a major falling out. And Joe Scarborough is one of the president's toughest critics in cable news. And some of the attacks from President Trump are essentially more personal in nature. Essentially, the president has said that Joe Scarborough is guilty or should be investigated for murdering one of his congressional aides back in the early 2000s, a woman who died after having a medical episode in his Florida congressional office. She hit her head. She died. The medical examiner looked at it and said that this was a tragic accident. President Trump is sort of essentially pushing a conspiracy theory that Joe Scarborough was actually involved in the death and that he is worthy of being investigated.
And the widower of the woman who had died years ago wrote to Twitter asking for the tweets to be removed. I'll quote a little bit from his letter. "I'm asking you to intervene in this instance because the president of the United States has taken something that does not belong to him, the memory of my dead wife, and perverted it for perceived political gain." Twitter responded, didn't remove the tweets and no fact checks on those. Again, staying with the political response, there's been some criticism, Tolu, even from some Republicans. I believe Congresswoman Liz Cheney and Senator Mitt Romney, both Republicans, have spoken out against the president's continued repeating of this conspiracy theory online and now at some press conferences.
Yeah, Republicans, a lot of them are not saying anything. You don't see very many Republicans standing up for this tactic that the president is using. You don't see many of them actually repeating his claims. Most of them are being silent, which can translate to sort of a disapproval via silence. Some are actually speaking out, the ones you mentioned, especially the Wall Street Journal editorial board, known to be run by conservative writers, basically said that the president should stop doing this. It is beneath the office. And you have to remember that the president is trafficking in a conspiracy theory, not only just a conspiracy theory against a famous cable news host, but also against a dead woman, a woman who died almost 20 years ago at the age of 28. The president is insinuating that she was involved in some kind of affair and that her death was a part of a scheme, a plot. And the woman's widower essentially has written to Twitter saying that this hurts his grieving process, that it essentially makes her memory something that is tied to these nasty political games and not more about the life she lived. And he asked that that these tweets be removed from the platform. Twitter did not decide to remove these tweets, but at the same time, they decided to add a label to some of the president's other tweets, showing that they are willing to take some action against the president when he spews things that are just not true or that are based on conspiracy theories.
We're talking to Washington Post White House reporter Tolu Olorunipa. It's our Week in Washington News Roundup. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Twitter and other social media sites have a responsibility to fact check the president's tweets or communications from others as well? Should they delete those tweets as requested by the widower we were just talking about there about this debunked conspiracy theory? Is there any responsibility for social media websites to police talk from politicians, or should it be a free zone and voters and readers decide? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Many of you have. Christine wrote, it's sad that they have to, referring to these fact checks. But Christine says, too many falsehoods to ignore. Scott wrote, yes, these are private companies. They have an obligation or responsibility to ensure their services are not used by those in power to deceive the people. A majority of people answered yes, Twitter does have a responsibility. But Paul wrote, when the liberal media on most other networks stop undermining the president and our country for their personal agenda, he wouldn't have much reason for being on there. What do you think? You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Tolu Olorunipa. He covers the White House at the Washington Post. We're talking about some of the top stories making news in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or join the conversation about Twitter fact checks of President Trump's statements. You can do that over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Well, I want to move over to the House of Representatives. They are going to try a new proxy voting system today, and that's going to have a legal challenge from some Republican members. What's going on there, Tolu?
Yeah, this is the first time in the history of the House that they are trying to do something that would essentially allow House representatives, congressmen, congresswomen to vote without being physically present in the chamber. This is a longstanding tradition in the House of Representatives, but due to the coronavirus and the fact that it's not safe for large groups of people to gather, the House passed essentially a rules change that allows members to vote by proxy by having another member who happens to be in the room voting on their behalf. They tried to find a way to do this in a bipartisan way, but they weren't able to come to an agreement. The Democrats were able to push it through. And now there is a lot of pushback from Republicans who are saying that this is not the way that the House of Representatives should be run, that anything that is passed with votes by proxy will not be valid, will not be considered constitutional. And for that reason, there's been a lot of back and forth, a lot of backbiting within the chamber over this issue. And as long as the coronavirus is with us, it seems like this issue is going to be with us as well, because Congress has to figure out a way to pass legislation, has to figure out a way to, you know, do their jobs in a way that's safe. And potentially that means in a way that does not have all 435 members gathered together in the room. And vote by proxy is the way they've decided to do that. But it is not without controversy at this moment, and they're still trying to sort their way through it. And there could be some major legal challenges that have to be worked out in the courts before we know for sure whether or not what they're trying to do is actually constitutional.
In the meantime, they're going to be, I understand, actually using this proxy voting system at least until the courts weigh in. Do I have that right?
That's the plan for now, unless they can come up with a better bipartisan solution. Right now, it seems like they are moving forward. They are planning to hold votes by proxy for, you know, all of the members who cannot be there in person. They'll have a colleague vote on their behalf. And the Democrats who run the House, they have the majority, and right now they are pushing forward with this process. And there are legal challenges. There is the possibility that the courts will rule one way or the other. But right now, it seems like they're full speed ahead, trying to move forward with legislation, trying to make sure that they can function as a body, even though they cannot have all 435 members in person, getting on planes, traveling back and forth. A large portion of the House of Representatives consists of older Americans who are, you know, more vulnerable to serious health outcomes from catching the coronavirus. So it's a healthcare issue. It's a constitutional issue. It's becoming a legal issue. So I would say stay tuned, because we are likely to see more on this. But for now, the Democrats are in charge, and they're moving forward with the idea of having proxy votes, having people who can't be in person still be able to cast their votes by having a colleague vote on their behalf.
Talking to Tolu Olorunipa with the Washington Post, looking at the big news in national politics. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234 about the Twitter fact-checking issue. Charlene is with us between Eau Claire and Mondovi. Charlene, hi.
Hi, David.
Hi, what do you want to bring up, Charlene? We lost Charlene. The phones are being a little dodgy today. She says she believes in fact-checking for Twitter and Facebook. We had a lot of interest in this on social media, Tolu. And I wonder, leading into the next story we'll talk about, given that in-person campaigning is tough, is social media going to be even more important in this election year? And it was a pretty big deal already in 2016.
Yes, and it's becoming an even bigger deal. I was just looking at the Trump campaign spending over the past week, and they've spent almost $1 million just in the last 7 days just on Facebook alone. There's a major war on the airwaves, and the airwaves now for the 21st century and for the 2020 campaign are being conducted largely on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter. The president uses Twitter to make major news announcements, and the fact that these social media companies are grappling with how much of a role they want to play in guarding truth, protecting the public against conspiracy theories, misinformation, disinformation, election meddling. After 2016, they all sort of had to have this major reckoning, and they're still working through it. And there are pitfalls on both sides of the issue, but it does appear that they are looking to make play a more significant role in deciding what they allow on their platforms, how they govern their platforms, how people who use their platforms are governed and controlled and sort of allowed to say certain things and not allowed to say other things based on, you know, potential harm to the public at large. And it does appear that the 2020 campaign, especially with Joe Biden and to a certain extent President Trump unable to campaign in person, that a lot of this is being done on social media and online. And there is also the potential for election meddling. So these social media companies are playing a pretty major role in determining how these campaigns get their message out and potentially determining what happens in November.
That said, there is a lot of attention on what would have been one of the big in-person events, the Republican National Convention this summer, scheduled to be in Charlotte, North Carolina. The Democrats were planning to meet in Milwaukee. It's up in the air as to, you know, how much of an in-person event this is going to be. President Trump is threatening to take it out of North Carolina. What's going on, Tolu?
President Trump is not happy that he has not gotten a yes or no either way on whether or not the convention, the Republican National Convention, can happen in August, towards the end of August, as scheduled in Charlotte, North Carolina. In part, that's because the governor of North Carolina, who happens to be a Democrat, has not been able to forecast what the situation on the ground is going to look like in August, in just a matter of a few months, in terms of the public safety, the public health risk of holding a major convention, tens of thousands of people gathered together at a time when coronavirus is still spreading. Right now, North Carolina is seeing pretty high rates of spread and infections in their state, and they can't forecast that in 3 months everything is going to be fine and we can go back to having major events. Actually, a large number of states can't forecast that far and say for sure that they're going to be comfortable with having thousands of people gather in a convention, because we know that when large numbers of people gather together, there's a large chance that a highly contagious disease like the coronavirus will be able to spread and you could have a new outbreak. So that has become a major issue. President Trump has lashed out against North Carolina, against the governor, saying that if he doesn't hear one way or the other very soon, that he's going to make a decision to move the convention out of North Carolina into maybe another friendly state like Georgia or Florida or Texas, where a Republican governor may be more willing to announce that they will take the convention no matter what, no matter what the situation on the ground looks like. So it's become a highly politically charged issue. President Trump seems to want his answers very quickly on whether or not we should be having a convention with large numbers of people gathered together at the end of the summer. The Democrats seem to be inching away from the idea of having a huge convention, moving more towards some kind of a virtual convention, maybe a smaller event, maybe an event with multiple satellite offices in different parts of the country. But right now it appears that President Trump wants an old-fashioned, large crowd convention, despite the fact that the coronavirus continues to spread in the country.
And finally, Tolu, I want to spend our last few minutes on the politics surrounding the coronavirus itself. Depending on which tracker you talk to, we've either just crossed 100,000 deaths in the United States, or we're just about to, probably within the next day or so. How is this being talked about as an issue in the presidential race?
Yeah, this is the central issue of the presidential race. 100,000 Americans have lost their lives to this disease, with thousands of people getting infected on a daily basis, and no sign that this will be completely behind us by the time we get to November. The economic impact has been major and massive, and for that reason, this is the central issue of the campaign. We hear Joe Biden making regular commentary criticizing President Trump's response, saying that President Trump was not on his game at the beginning of this crisis, that he ignored it, that he downplayed it, that he did not act in time. And for that reason, we've lost thousands of Americans. President Trump has tried to defend his handling of this virus. His campaign is out with a new ad today, essentially praising the president's response, saying that even though he's not a Mr. Nice Guy, that he's not polite, he's done what it's taken to get control of the virus, to make sure that everyone who needed a ventilator could get one, to ensure that there was mass testing all over the country. So this is the central issue of the campaign, and a lot of voters are making their decision on who they think would be best positioned to manage the country through a time of crisis, through a time of economic turmoil. And for that reason, this campaign, this presidential election, is very uncertain. There's no clear precedent for this. There's no sign of what exactly might happen. We've never been through a major pandemic like this, right on the edge of a massively important presidential election. So there's a lot of concern about what may happen. There's a lot of uncertainty. The polls have been all over the place, and a lot can happen in the next 5.5 months. And it's clear that this issue is going to determine whether or not President Trump remains the president, or whether or not Joe Biden replaces him as the 46th president of the United States.
And briefly, in our last minute, Tolu, we've covered a lot of ground today. What's the story you're watching for over the next week?
Well, one thing I'm watching is the issue of this the FISA court, the legislation to essentially reauthorize what is essentially warrantless surveillance of Americans. It's become highly politicized in the age of the Russia investigation, and President Trump has threatened to veto a bill that is being pushed. And right now, there's a lot of uncertainty about whether or not Republicans and Democrats will be able to come to some agreement over how to reauthorize this important national security legislation at a time when President Trump is very unhappy about how his campaign was caught up in some of these FISA applications, and members of his campaign were monitored via FISA in part because of their frequent contacts with Russians during the campaign in 2016. So I'll be watching to see what happens. It's a very uncertain process. The president's late decision to threaten to veto this bill, to rally Republicans against the bill, could make it harder for this bill to ultimately pass.
Talu, thanks as always for joining us today.
You got it. Thank you.
That's Washington Post White House reporter Talu Olorunipa. We talked to him today about several top stories in national politics, including the new fact-checking feature Twitter has added to some of President Trump's tweets, not all of them so far. You can keep sharing your thoughts on that, by the way, over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Eric wrote there, they're considered forums, not publishers. It's an empty vessel filled by users. Once they add content, they become a publisher and subject to different rules. Elizabeth wrote, social media is still media, still corporate-owned, and even though people generate some of the content, there's a lot of advertising and manipulation. Elizabeth says there should be public accountability, not just dividends to shareholders. Share your thoughts again on the Ideas Network Facebook page.